Zelensky's running around the world, shaking countries down for more military and more financial aid for this war. But I don't know what his plan is, other than to kick Russia out. Well, it's not going so well right now.
Welcome to another edition of the Straight Talk Podcast with America's Sheriff. I'm your host, David Clark. Let's start here. As you know, or you may know, last week, the sweetheart deal that Hunter Biden, the son of President Joe Biden, received from the United States Department of Justice, it unraveled. And it just it unraveled like a cheap suit in front of a federal judge who smelled a rat on the plea agreement. And she didn't accept it. Good for her. So anyway, the White House makes a statement a couple days later. And they're ruling out a pardon for Hunter Biden. It's from the Washington Times. And it says, the White House said Thursday there is no possibility that President Biden will pardon his son Hunter as he tries to navigate thorny plea negotiations for tax and gun crimes. Now, let me stop right there. You'd have to be dangerously naive to believe that if the worst case scenario happened and Hunter Biden was convicted or had to plead guilty to some charge that may land him in federal prison, that his dad, who has the means as president of the United States and his power to be able to pardon people, that he wouldn't step in and save his son from going to federal prison. Who's supposed to be stupid enough to believe that? It says here, in this story, the president and his son also face an intensifying congressional investigation of alleged influence peddling and bribery in the family's hugely profitable foreign business deals. That's a problem for the president. Hunter has the goods on his old man. Hunter could see to it that his dad, President Joe Biden, ends up in a federal prison by becoming a state's witness so that he would be granted leniency. I mean, that's why I said, who is supposed to be stupid enough to believe this? Hunter has his dad, Joe, over a barrel. And there's no way that if Hunter Biden ends up in federal prison, that he's not going to take his dad down with him. And Joe knows that. I mean, this whole idea that he wouldn't pardon him is just lunacy. And then there's this aspect. You know, during this whole time that this story has been going on with their son Hunter and his criminal involvement, Joe has maintained, we love our son and we support him as he continues to rebuild his life. As a matter of fact, that's a quote from this story. From it says, as we have said, the president and first lady, they love their son and they support him as he continues to rebuild his life. Joe has repeated that over and over and over again, saying, my son has done nothing wrong. He keeps saying that. Joe loves his son. He loves him so much that he'd allow him to go to federal prison when he has the means with which to spare him going to federal prison. That's how much he loves him. I'll tell you right now. If I, David Clark, was going to federal prison and my dad had by some means, let's say connections, to get me a pardon from Joe Biden through channels, and he didn't try, I wouldn't think my dad loved me. I mean, this whole the whole idea of it is insane. It's all BS. Joe is going to pardon his son, come hell or high water. And we all know that. Let's turn the page. Recently, the city of New York, which is spiraling into chaos, crime and violence, under the administration of Eric Adams. Recently, the city agreed to a nearly $14 million class action settlement with people arrested by NYPD officers in May of 2020 after the George Floyd incident. Over 1,300 people were arrested at the time. News stories point out that what started out as a peaceful protest in numerous cities delved into rioting, looting, arson of businesses, and public buildings. That's always the case. It always starts out as a peaceful protest. But as the thing goes on, it turns ugly. It starts out well-intentioned, but it always turns into a riot. Now, when officers respond to these things, they're expected to keep the peace and protect life and property, right? That's what the mission is. Keep the peace and protect life and property. And they have to use every reasonable tactic to accomplish this. And that includes mass arrests, tear gas, and the deployment of other less than lethal options. Now, I don't doubt that a few people not participating in looting and arson get caught up in the melee. They get caught up in the middle of this. But how are the police in this chaotic situation supposed to determine on a case-by-case basis who's doing what? It's mass pandemonium at the time. And in addition to that, the cops are being attacked and assaulted. They're having rocks and bottles hurled at them. Some cops suffered significant injuries during these riots. And this isn't the first settlement by a city in the aftermath of these George Floyd riots. In Philadelphia, they agreed to an over $9 million giveaway over allegations of physical and emotional injuries by police. And I had to ask, what about the physical and emotional injuries suffered by police officers in these riots? Have any of these people thought about how suicide is now the leading cause of death for police and that no other profession is at a crisis level for suicides due in part to the emotional strain of police work? What about the cops? And in Denver, Colorado, they paid out nearly $4 million to settle protesters' claims. Folks, we have lost our minds. Cities capitulating to rioters is entering a very dark place on the subject of law and order. First of all, there should be no class action suits on this stuff, only individual claims. Where a person claiming harm has to present in court specific evidence of harm against a specific police officer. Smearing an entire agency leaves all the officers not involved bitter. They get no chance to defend their reputations. Now, I know city officials could care less that the integrity of their police department will now come into question because rioting has become a lawfully sanctioned activity in these urban centers. And one last thing on this. What about the settlement for the businesses that were looted with some completely destroyed as officers were given stand-down orders from police executives? It's been estimated that $2 billion in property damage occurred nationally from Black Lives Matter riots. What about the insurance deductibles that had to be covered by the business owner? And keep in mind, folks, some of these insurance policies did not include losses from riots. Where is the settlement for these business owners? And how about, like as I said, how about for the officers that were injured and killed? Where is their settlement for the city for not providing them with the necessary equipment to quell a riot after the agencies were defunded? This is insanity. Let's turn the page. Another lawsuit. This one's interesting. This is the kind of stuff that doesn't get a lot of play, and that's why I encourage you to come to this podcast. We're going to cover stuff that doesn't grab the headlines. It's not breaking news, but it's important stuff. So the country of Mexico has filed a lawsuit against U.S. gun makers over cartel violence. This article here says a federal appellate court is considering whether gun manufacturers should have immunity from lawsuits brought by foreign governments in a case dealing with weapons trafficked across the U.S.-Mexican border to criminal organizations. The government of Mexico has sued nearly a dozen gun manufacturers for aiding and abetting criminal organizations south of the border. The Mexican government says the manufacturers know their weapons are sold to gun traffickers and they should be held liable. Here's a quote from a guy representing Mexico's side of the story. Quote, every year defendants' deliberate business practice results in some 340,000 of their guns being lawfully imported from the United States into unlawfully imported from the United States into Mexico. Drug cartels and other criminal organizations use these military-style weapons, that's taken from the left's language, these military-style weapons to wreak havoc in Mexico and terrorize its populace. No, wait a minute. What about the illegal drugs, the fentanyl, and the sex trafficking pouring across Mexico's border into our southern border? Maybe we should sue the government of Mexico for that. And if Mexico knows that they have a cartel problem along the border, what are they doing about it? Why aren't they encouraging the United States, instead of this nonsense, to get that wall built? Now, if there's some evidence that a specific gun manufacturer is actually dealing directly with these cartels, that's one thing. But that's not what's happening here. The one-way street. They have the cartel that controls the border. Their northern border, our southern border. The cartel controls. What are they doing to get rid of the cartel? Nothing. Nothing. Why don't they send their military onto their northern border and disrupt the cartel? But there was something else that I thought about as I read this story. Do you remember Fast and Furious? If there's one lawsuit that should be filed over gun smuggling and gun trafficking, it should be against the Obama administration. Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Eric Holder. Remember Operation Fast and Furious? Where they created this scheme to have guns intentionally smuggled into Mexico and into the arms of a cartel. And then later what they wanted to do was say, see, we got a gun problem here in the United States and these manufacturers need to be shut down or curtailed. Remember they lost control of the guns, the Obama administration, Eric Holder? And these guns did end up in the hands of cartel. And by the way, one of them was used to kill a Border Patrol agent, Brian Terry. We still don't have answers on Operation Fast and Furious. 12 years later, we still don't have any or all the answers on that ill-fated operation. Talk about gun smuggling? The Obama administration intentionally, Operation Fast and Furious, look it up. Look it up, folks. It won't be hard. I was able to do it. And then there's this. Let's get back. Last week in the podcast, I talked about this Ukraine situation, how it's out of control. Our people on Capitol Hill are misleading us. They're not asking pertinent questions. People are dying. Our military capability is being weakened. Our munition stockpile is going down with no real, not only just a plan, but capability to restock them. The suppliers just don't have the capability. Go back and listen to the podcast if you didn't hear it, and you'll see some of the things, you'll hear some of the things that I said. How it's weakening the U.S. military capability. And how you got this guy, Zelensky. And my position last week was not in support of Russia. The hell with Russia. It's not Russia that's been given anywhere between $40 billion and $100 billion U.S. dollars in military aid and economic aid. Russia hasn't received any F-16s and cluster bombs and munitions from the United States. And Zelensky's been running around painting this pretty picture of what's been going on. Oh, our spring counteroffensive, it's doing well. We're winning the battle. It's all nonsense. I talked about it. Well, I'm going to give you some follow-up information because this problem is not going away. This thing's getting worse. And it is teetering toward a potential world war. Do you know that Putin is deploying nuclear weapons in Belarus? I found this story from back in June. It says Russia will start deploying tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Putin announced in March that he agreed to deploy such weapons in Belarus, pointing to a U.S. deployment of tactical nuclear weapons in a host of European countries over many decades. It says here more than 15 months, this is from Reuters, by the way, more than 15 months into the biggest land war in Europe since World War II. Listen to that. Putin says the United States and its allies are pumping arms into Ukraine as part of an expanding proxy war aimed at bringing Russia to its knees. It says here, the war in Ukraine has triggered what both Moscow and Washington says is the deepest crisis in relations since the depths of the Cold War, with major nuclear arms control treaties unraveling and both sides denouncing the other in public. So if these weapons, these nuclear tactical weapons that are positioned in Belarus now, if the weapons were launched from Belarus's main air base outside of Minsk, those delivery vehicles could potentially reach almost all of Eastern Europe, including a host of NATO members. Do you remember what I said last week? That the United States needs to find a diplomatic lead, not find, lead a diplomatic way out of this war for all parties involved, and the United States is going to have to lead it. Forget about the UN. The UN is useless. And NATO's not going to be able to do anything about this either. So here's some more on this hyped up Ukraine campaign, you know, this spring offensive that was supposed to turn the tides of this war. This again from the Washington Times. It was billed as the military blockbuster of the summer, a game changer in what would be Ukraine's decisive campaign to drive back the Russian invaders. To which I say, oh, really? When does it start? Instead, Kyiv's widely anticipated counteroffensive has been at best a slow-moving slog with little discernible progress. At worst, critics say, it's shaping up to be an undeniable failure that proves once and for all that neither Ukraine nor Russia is capable of a definitive win on the battlefield, which is why both sides need to be forced to a negotiated settlement to the end of this war and all of this carnage and destruction. By the time this thing's over, Ukraine's going to be a gravel pit. There won't be much standing. So it says the Biden administration should push Ukraine toward the negotiating table rather than watch as more money and manpower are expended on a military campaign that ultimately cannot achieve its prime objectives. I said that last week. That's the only way out. A negotiated settlement to the end of this war. So it goes on to say, even Ukrainian President Zelensky has acknowledged what is increasingly obvious to outside observers, that the counteroffensive hasn't lived up to the hype. How come it isn't obviously clear to members of Congress and the Biden administration who keep writing these checks and giving them more munitions and military supplies? Why isn't it obvious to them? All we get from them, well, you know, it's a vital interest and we have to do everything we can to defend Ukraine. Well, to a point. I said that last week, maybe to a point. But what's the end game? We don't have one. There's no end in sight. So it says Zelensky made a familiar pitch for more military and logistical aid from the West. So in this article here, they've asked some military advisors, Mark Milley, General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, some questions on war exercises. And he says, because that's the reason why it hasn't met its objectives, because that's the difference between war on paper and real war, General Milley said. These are real people and real machines that are out there clearing minefields, and they're really dying. I think there's a lot of fighting left to go. Well, that's the problem. It's also the most costly from an equipment perspective, and in terms of the human lives, sure to be lost. Mr. Zelensky's troops face an uphill battle, said retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, a senior fellow at the think tank Defense Priorities, which advocates for a more restrained U.S. military role abroad. So it says, quote, it's not that Zelensky's forces are going slowly forward, it's that they aren't attaining any of the initial tactical objectives on the way to the Azov coast, and it's precisely because of combat fundamentals necessary to win are largely and in some cases entirely absent. Colonel Davis and other observers say it's time for Mr. Zelensky to consider serious peace talks with the Kremlin. I said that last week. I've been saying that since I've been following this war. You know, we're a year and a half into it. It's time to stop. And the U.S. is in a position to either continue this war by escalating it, or to force Zelensky. You can't force Russia, but you can force Zelensky. I think you can force Russia diplomatically to force Zelensky to the negotiating table. So anyway, back to this, Colonel Davis and others said it's time for Zelensky to consider serious peace talks. Since the start of the war in February of 2022, the Biden administration had maintained that it wants, listen to this, the Biden administration has maintained that it wants Ukraine in the strongest possible position when negotiations begin, and only Kyiv could say when the time is right. I think he's wrong. I think Biden is wrong. Only when Ukraine's in the strongest negotiation, how many more people are going to have to die? How much more physical destruction to this country? And maybe we end up on the brink of World War III, or maybe we end up with Russia using nukes. Don't doubt Putin if he says that he will use all means necessary to protect Russia and its people. Don't doubt him, folks. So anyway, it says with its counteroffensive seemingly stall, that time may have arrived. The U.S. political calendar adds even more urgency, and you heard me talk about that last week. You fight a war on two fronts. One is operationally on the battlefield, and the other is politically at home. You have to have continued public support for these wars. And people get fatigued in the United States. They fatigue when this thing goes on for too long. So it says several Republican presidential candidates have indicated that they oppose unlimited funds and war materials for Ukraine. That sentiment is growing in Washington, with troubling signs that America's own weapons stockpiles are dwindling. Why is the Congress okay with this? The Armed Forces Committee, why are, when they're holding their hearings and when Zelensky comes with his hat in his hand, why aren't these questions being asked? Why isn't Zelensky being told, you're getting no more money, you get no more munitions and cluster bombs and whatever, it's time to get to the negotiation table? The New York Times editorial board, the Washington Post, the LA Times, Chicago Tribune Times, any major newspaper, all their editorial boards have not criticized America's approach to this war, meaning the White House. I mean, Joe Biden is the commander in chief. No criticism whatsoever. None. The death and destruction. And remember, I said Zelensky has not reported any casualty numbers. He can't get away with that. And like I said in the last episode, if this war were being conducted by a Republican president, all those liberal entities, big tech and all of them, would be blasting this war. How many more people are going to have to die? How many more women and children? Our military capability is being weakened. How much more money? We have people starving at home. We need money for, you know, these domestic programs, and we're spending it in Ukraine. You know, you'd hear it. So it says here, that sentiment is growing in Washington with troubling signs that America's own weapon stockpiles are dwindling, as I said. I think the Ukrainian high command knows all of this because I think we've told them that. But there's not much they can do about it. They're not going to sacrifice their guys in the minefields to meet our political calendar. You see what I mean? You see the pickle we're in? And again, with no end in sight. And this is the stuff that doesn't make the breaking news, and we don't get long media sessions on it, on TV, on radio, and other publications, op-eds. We get nothing, very little. I have to dig to find this stuff, and usually I find it, as I keep up with it, in some small area of these, even the news entities that are covering it. You have to search high and low to find anything written about it. It's like it's out of sight, out of mind. Not a proxy war. We're in this thing up to our eyeballs. And we're getting close to the presidential campaign season. And as you know, I indicated, some of these candidates are saying, I'm against continued fighting in this war in this fashion. This needs to be a key component of the presidential election season in 2024. What are we going to do with this? How are we going to end it? What is the end game? And then, as I indicated last week as well, once this war ends, eventually it will. I don't know if it's next year, it's 5 years, 10 years, endless war. Who's going to pay to rebuild the country? And I ask that sarcastically because we are. We're going to foot the bill. We destroyed it. That's what Zelensky will say. Well, you guys helped us destroy it. And we don't have the money to rebuild. You can't come in here and be involved in the destruction of our country and then just walk away. That'll be the storyline. That'll be the narrative. And not just from Zelensky, but from all these NATO countries, because they don't have the money. So they're going to kind of like push this America's way. Here, you deal with this. You're the one that supplied most of this. You're the one that provided the money and the resources to continue the conflict instead of trying to negotiate a settlement. And that always happens in these wars. There's always some point, even in Iraq, in Afghanistan, there's some point where the diplomacy is supposed to take over. Maybe you leave some troops behind and all that stuff, but the diplomacy kicks in. And I just think the sooner, the better. This is a big deal. Thanks for tuning in. Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell and MyPillow are launching the MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with the brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night. And more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, a buy one, get one free offer with promo code Clark. MyPillow 2.0, with its temperature regulating technology, is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, it does. MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code Clark, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, to get your MyPillow 2.0 now. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America's Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And just a reminder, we'd love for you to join our Straight Shooters VIP podcast club for only $5 per month. And with that membership, you'll receive invitations to attend private podcast events throughout the year as a VIP guest when we come to your town. Plus, if you join today, you'll also receive a free coffee mug and a sample of our private label coffee as long as supplies last. Subscribe and join at AmericaSheriff.com. This podcast is brought to you by AmericaSheriff.com with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of J.L. Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcasts or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com, 706-518-2116. That's jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.